This podcast contains explicit material. Listener discretion is advised. Thanks for joining us for this mini text episode of The Joy of Text. Rabbi Linzer has brought us a text from Tractate Nedarim.
Yes. So this is from Nedarim 91a and b, and Nedarim is a tractate devoted to the power of words. And at the very end of it, it deals with certain issues about, well, when women sort of make certain claims about things that might require their husbands to divorce them, whether they are to be believed or not. So in that context, the Talmud tells certain a few stories. I'll read one or two of them. I'll just read it in the English here. A certain woman was accustomed to rise in the morning and wash her husband's hands after if they had had sex the previous night. One day she brought him water to wash. But he said to her, "What do you mean? We didn't have sex today." "Oh," she said, "if so, then it must have been one of those Gentile perfume sellers who were here today. And I thought you were him." There, he was you.
Oh, my God. So, that reminds me of the text you used where he thought his wife was the prostitute, remember?
Yes, that's a good point. I hadn't thought about that. Rav Nachman said, "Oh, we don't believe her. We think that she's really, wants to get divorced from her husband and marry another man. So that's why she's made this claim." So we say.
We don't believe her.
We don't believe, because if that were true.
She couldn't go back to her husband.
She couldn't go back to her husband. He'd have to divorce her. So right, we are going to say legally she's not believed by claiming.
So he doesn't
she's
have to
making
divorce
up
her.
The story. So
right. Even though they think she wants out of the marriage and that's why she's doing it.
Well, it's not clear, meaning I think that my read is that the rabbis are saying we're trying to save this marriage. And the way we're going to save this marriage is by finding a way to say that this never really happened, even though maybe we really do believe it did happen.
Right, it's like looking at loopholes.
Right, exactly. And the way we're going to make it is we're going to say, oh, of course we can't believe her. We're just going to believe that this is a ruse she's using to get out of the marriage.
Okay.
And therefore, right. So that's, yeah, but the funny thing is that all of the evidence would indicate that, I mean, from what we're told of the story, she slept with somebody else.
It's really funny that she would say, "Oh, I must have slept with someone else." But instead of just saying, "I just thought your hands needed washing."
Well, no, that's what they would do after the morning of like having sex.
She could have made something up.
But
this is where Rebecca and I are having a little trouble with this because oh, I'm sorry. I must have slept with somebody else. I didn't notice that he wasn't the same size, shape, voice tone, sexual style.
There you go. That's supporting the Gemara's read that she's making it all up.
It's a little mind-boggling, but okay.
All right. Next story. A certain woman was showed her displeasure to her husband. She was angry at her husband. So he said, "Why are you so angry?" So she replied, "Because it was never so painful having sex with you before as it was today." So he said, "But we haven't had sex today." "Oh, if so," she said, "it must have been one of those Gentile perfume sellers or naphtha sellers who was here. Because if it wasn't you, it must have been one of them." So said Rav Nachman, "We disregard what she said. She's really thinking about marrying someone else and we don't trust her."
Are there any stories like this in the reverse?
Well, I'll read the last story.
Okay,
which
fine.
A certain man was in private with a married woman in her house. Hearing that her husband was coming in, the adulterer jumped out of the window, ran through a hedge of bushes, and fled. Said Rava, "Oh, the wife is permitted because had he really been committing adultery, he would not have made himself visible. This guy who was running away wouldn't have made himself visible to the husband. So the fact that he jumped out of the window in a way that was visible must be that he didn't really commit adultery with his wife because then he wouldn't have allowed himself to be
visible." Okay, so they think that's true?
No. My theory here, I don't know. I'm not in their heads. But my theory here is that the rabbis are trying to save these marriages and are sort of the same way. This is why I think it's in Tractate Nedarim. Nedarim is all about the power of words. And here the rabbis are using their words to create realities, which are not the actual realities. Mm. That's at least the way I read this. Well, read the last story.
Right, because we think it's absurd, right? He's running away.
Obviously. Had he really committed adultery,
he would have hid under the bed.
Exactly.
Okay,
exactly.
Because it was much less likely to be found that way.
Right.
Okay, fine. Okay.
A certain adulterer visited a woman. Her husband came home, whereupon the lover went and placed himself behind a curtain. Now there was some cress, some vegetables there on the table.
So I'm just curious, is behind the curtain Kama's really hiding himself?
I don't know. We'll see. And a snake had bitten from this, and the rabbis were always afraid that snakes bite from food and leave behind poison, and it's fatal. Okay, and so now the husband was about to eat from this vegetable. So then from behind the curtain, the man says, don't eat from it. A snake bit into it. So he exposed himself to the husband to protect the husband. Said Rava, the wife is permitted. Had this man actually committed adultery, he would have wanted the husband to eat it so that he would have died. And then he could have been with the wife.
Except, do you remember the source we said where the guy only wants the woman who when she's not his wife?
So that's how the Talmud here ends as well. Okay, so he says, if you're willing to commit adultery, you're willing to let somebody die. But the Gemara says, wait a minute, that's not necessarily true, because maybe he likes the fact that it's only an adulterous relationship and he doesn't want the husband to die. So therefore, because you could have made that argument, we're saying, even so, the fact that he was trying to protect the husband shows that he really had not committed adultery.
So you've just given us a group of sources where the rabbis are sort of trying to find every possible like loophole, you know, question mark in order to... to say that they don't have to divorce each other.
Exactly. So just to clarify, because if she had committed adultery, they would have to divorce. Whereas
correct.
If there's the possibility that she didn't, they could salvage the marriage.
Exactly. And by legally saying, which doesn't mean that all of a sudden this solves the problem, you know, but it solves the problem legally. And now that halachically, and now
there's all the emotional.
Exactly. Now they can work it out themselves, you know, and, you know, you could sort of say, how can they work it out themselves if they can't exactly be honest about it? So I think it raises like really interesting, you know, questions about
or if she feels like she's being negated entirely,
right.
Like her whole life she's negated. And now even when she's trying to have an affair, she's negated.
But at least it's not just the woman's words that are being dismissed. Like all of the facts are being dismissed
right.
as a way of. And the question is like, you know, does the fiction, I mean, it's an interesting question also about transparency and honesty and so on. Right. Does the fiction help them to continue to live together or, you know,
does it make
or is
it
there,
worse?
Ultimately, yeah.
So that last story, they refer to him as an adulterer.
Adulterer, yeah, you noticed that, right?
End up that we sort of give them the benefit of the doubt.
Yeah, I mean, the Hebrew word is no'eif, literally, adulterer. So it's exact. I'm glad you noticed that. Like, yeah, we basically know he's an... Now, you could say maybe he was an adulterer with other women. But I think
he's
the point
a known
is,
adulterer.
Like, we know what's going on here. And, you know, look, this comes up... This is very important halachically because there are cases. A woman has an affair and other situations. And the question is, how halachically can the couple still remain married? And sometimes we actually do actually rely on this. We say, technically, even if she says it, we don't believe her, you know, legally, we don't believe her. And then how does the couple find process it in order to actually, if they want to stay together and be honest about what happened?
So all of these are brought all in the same place.
Yep.
And is there like a something? I mean, they're all tied together because they're these stories. But is there a conclusion at some point? Like, is there some? Are they trying to get somewhere with all
yeah,
these stories?
What they're getting is that when a woman, I mean, it starts with a teaching in the Mishnah that when a woman says certain things about
you don't believe her
because not because we don't believe women. I mean, otherwise we do, but because we say that it's she's using it as a way to get out of the marriage, and therefore the husband is not in a position where he's forced to divorce her. The point of these stories, which is more than the Mishnah, is that these stories, you would say, the circumstantial evidence
would even suggest that
really indicate that this is really what happened.
Right.
And nevertheless, they ignore this.
But also, these first two stories say, you know, disregard her, she'd conceived a passion for another. And so, I mean, we're disregarding the passion of the woman. But I think maybe one point is we disregard passionate. The first and the second one. The last sentence, the first one, she had conceived a passion for another. Declaration has no substance.
Oh, right. Maybe she's
Rabbi
lusting
Nachman
after
says,
another
disregard
man and trying
her,
to get out of it. Right.
Right. But it's like, so we disregard her feelings. But I think you could also read it in less of a sexist way as just we disregard that extramarital passion at all. Like, we don't care about it. I mean, I'm taking like a
right,
the high road here.
But I think the related thing is that in the stories about dismissing the woman's claims, it's saying, oh, because we can ascribe an ulterior motive. In the last stories, there were no claims. It was like seeing the guy run out of the window, jump out of the window.
Right.
And we can't say there's some ulterior motive going on here. And we're just like dismissing the evidence that is staring us in the face by coming up with some crazy explanation.
It reminds me of that story that you've told at least once, maybe twice, with the bride walking down the aisle pregnant.
Yeah.
And Rav Moshe saying, you don't know that she had sex before.
Maybe
and
it's
saying,
a pillow.
Well, what? She's pregnant, and him saying it's a pillow.
Right. Like you were saying, the rabbis using their words to create a new construct.
Realities, right. So, yeah, it is the power of words. And I think that these become very important halachic. I think they strike an important balance about, A, you know, the rabbi's role both in halacha and the rabbi's role in the pastoral role in helping a couple grapple with something. But, you know, but it also raises important questions about, like I said, honesty and transparency and so on.
This episode of The Joy of Text was recorded by Mike Hurst and produced and edited by me, Rebecca Honig-Friedman. If you have questions or comments you'd like to share with us, you can do so anonymously at www.thejoyoftext.org or send us a regular email at joyoftextpodcast@gmail.com. The Joy of Text is available on iTunes, SoundCloud, or any podcast app. If you like what you hear, show your support by giving us a 5-star rating and stay up to date with our latest episodes and live events by following us on Facebook or Twitter.